Welcome. You are listening to Central Synagogue's podcast, featuring sermons, lectures, and conversations from Manhattan's historic Central Synagogue. I'm Rabbi Angela Buchdahl. Each week, we invite you to listen to messages of strength and hope given by our clergy on Shabbat or Jewish holidays. You can also listen to audio recordings of other programs and lectures given at Central by subscribing to this podcast on the platform of your choice. If you'd like to watch our live stream services or learn more about our congregation, I invite you to visit us at centralsynagogue.org. We hope you enjoy this week's sermon. And raise me up to a world of living, oh, safe from the storm, in the shelter of your shalom. I know that our Jewish community has been concerned about rising anti-Semitism in its many forms. And when David Sable and Rachel Krauss from the Shine a Light movement approached Central about participating in a national interfaith effort to shine a light on anti-Semitism this weekend, I knew we wanted to participate. They encouraged us to think about partners and allies in this work, and I could not think of a person who shines more light on this issue in his community and beyond than my friend and inspiration, Imam Abdullah Antepli. Imam Antepli is on the faculty at Duke University, where he also served as its first Muslim chaplain. He hosted my daughter when she visited Duke, and I think he knows more Jewish students on campus than the Hillel rabbi does. He was born in Turkey in a secular family, and his path to his own Muslim faith led him down a road to fight the hate and anti-Semitism that he was taught growing up in his home country. Imam Antepli had the vision to found and lead the Muslim Leadership Institute at the Shalom Hartman Institute, which in its last 10 years has brought over 150 American Muslim leaders to Israel to learn about Judaism, Zionism, and Israel from Jewish scholars. And for this truly courageous act, Imam Antepli has received much criticism, ostracism, even death threats in his own community. But it has helped change the conversation in the Muslim community, and it has planted seeds of relationship and understanding that are flowering in all sorts of unexpected places. Imam Antepli was the first imam after 9/11 to deliver a prayer in the U.S. Congress, the only one to have done so now twice. He speaks six languages, and he has used them to build bridges between disparate communities, most notably Jews and Muslims. For his pointed critique of religious extremism, he has been banned from multiple countries, mostly authoritarian ones, including, unfortunately, his own native Turkey. Imam Antepli has been widely recognized for his moral leadership, most recently receiving the ADL's Daniel Pearl Award at the most recent national conference. For all of his work in building understanding and promoting religious tolerance. I feel incredibly grateful that I'm introducing not just a giant religious figure in America, but a friend. He has truly done this work out of a sense of calling, that this is the work of his life. And he's not just fighting it to help the Jewish community, but he does it also, he would say, for the soul of his own Muslim community. And he holds up a mirror to all of us, challenging us, for each of us, to take our own reckoning with our assumptions and our prejudices, because we all have them, and we need to fight them together. We could not have a better friend or champion, and it is my great honor to invite Imam Antepli to our Bima tonight.
Shabbat shalom, everyone. Good evening, and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Peace and blessings be upon you all. What a delight, distinct honor, and pleasure. This is my first visit to Central Synagogue today, and I did my Muslim Sheikhianus earlier. But especially do it under the leadership of our dear, fearless leader, who I have been part of her ever-growing fan club for a very long time. And wonderful to welcome Shabbat, wonderful to just see the beauty of Shabbat Bride's beauty together. As a serious student of Judaism, over the years, I have developed an incredibly long list of holy envies, holy jealousies about Judaism. And by far, Shabbat is always number one. I am so jealous of this particular Jewish expression, this calling once a week. When world's most significant, most powerful, most impactful religion, capitalism, telling us million times a day, buy more, do more, travel more, achieve more, success more, and causing this overscheduled life of ours in the modern day, here is a religion for the last 4,000 years telling us not to do that for once a week. For once a week to stop all these external journeys, center ourselves around whatever we feel our center of morality and light, and slow down and evaluate our lives to see if we are on the trajectory of who we want to be, who we ought to be, who we're supposed to be. I am incredibly jealous. And I always regret, I wish more Jews would appreciate Shabbat as much as I do. When I speak about the Shabbat and how much I am obsessed with all this energy that it brings to us individually and collectively, I don't always feel that zeal and commitment, but the world needs Shabbat, especially during these times. In my brief remarks, I would like to invite us to a prayerful reaction to the increase of hate and darkness and racism and especially anti-Semitism in our world. It is a striking similarity between Islam and Judaism that almost all our prayers are time-connected, time-affiliated. That time was the first thing God sanctified before sanctifying anything, any land, any religion, any community, any holy man and woman. Muslim tradition and Jewish tradition has gone so far that every prayer is connected to a particular event or a movement of a sun or a moon or event, seasons, etc. So this current rise of darkness, current rise of unprecedented hate and anti-Semitism and racism and hate of any kind, our reaction as people of faith, our response as people of morality should be, it's a time for a different kind of prayer. As we pray when there's a sickness, when there's a flood, when there's a war, when there's a peace, we have to respond from a place of prayerfulness. We have to connect to the centers of our moral power and respond through this way. If darkness can only be fought through light, if hate can only be fought through love, so we have to find out what that light is, what that shining is, and what that love is. Otherwise, at best, if we are responding to this rising darkness, hate, rising anti-Semitism, which is incredibly despicable, shocking, and if you are not shocked, that means you are not paying attention. You are not seeing the numbers. You are not looking at this FBI and ADL's recording on from college campuses to churches to mosques to and other places, etc., that things are getting worse and worse every year in record numbers. But our response to this emergence and resurrection of our contemporary evil faces, contemporary Hamas, contemporary Amaleks are showing their ugly faces, it has to come from a prayerful place. For a people of faith and morality, this cannot be only crisis management. This cannot be only problem solving. This cannot be only fixing a problem or bringing a solution. If we are reacting as a crisis management team, maybe that's why, because of that, that things are getting worse and not getting any better. In my, again, brief remarks, I would like to share a few humble observations about if we are not reacting from an ethical, moral, and prayerful space, how does this problem manifest? What are the consequences of not responding to the darkness with a light, but through transactional, organizational, or institutional policies and reactions? I would like to share few of them as a caution to me and all of us. And tomorrow morning, I'll be at the synagogue as well as part of a program, Imam Omer Bajwa and I. Maybe tomorrow we can brainstorm how to do it. Allow me to, at least since I get the most attention tonight, I would like to warn about these consequences of not reacting from the right place, from the prayerful place. We have to look into this ugliness and say it's a time of prayer. But this time, we have to act and pray with our feet, not with our supplicational oral language, as late Abraham Joshua Heschel said, in his spirit and in his wisdom. And we have to do it together. One consequence of not reacting through light to defeat darkness, if we don't do that, then the hate and the different manifestation of hate will be compartmentalized. It will be siloed. Antisemitism will be only a Jewish problem. Homophobia will be only an LGBTQ issue. Islamophobia will be a problem for the Muslim community. Until and unless we realize there is a rising hate coming from the same place, this is the same evil manifesting under different names, different manifestations, different colors, we will not be able to defeat this. We will not be able to replace darkness with light. We will not be able to replace hate with love. If antisemitism is only a Muslim problem, only a Jewish problem, if only Jews are supposed to work on this issue, and if all the other forms of hate and racism is also particular to particular communities, that's how the good people are divided in their force, in their reaction. In this extraordinary time, one way to respond prophetically, holistically, and prayerfully allow me to sort of center my thoughts. I get into this Southern Baptist preaching mode all the time. I'm trying to control that image so I can really work through this with you. Dangers of reacting to this rising hate and anti-Semitism as a sheer problem-solving or crisis management. Also, in addition to compartmentalizing this, despite the force, we have very little. It will not allow us to respond to this problem with an act of mercy and compassion. It will show every problem to us as a nail and make us as a hammer, that the only way to respond to this rising antisemitism and hate is through the forces of muscle, through punitive measures, through using the force of law. This problem is rising because the moral health of America, moral health of the global community, is declining and deteriorating, and therefore, for those whose job is to respond through the force of law and muscles is one thing. But for those of us who are people of faith and morality, we have to respond with an act of kindness, engagement, education, and long-term game. As this problem has been on the rise and development for many decades, it's not going to go away immediately. And many of the people who are infected by the virus of hate, many of them, they don't know any better, and I was one of them. I know this. If nobody would be recovering, it would be me, because I spent a significant part of my teenage years soaked in deep anti-Semitism in Turkey, where I grew up. I spent a good chunk of my early years believing that Jews as a people and Judaism as a religion is irredeemably evil. And look where I am now. And if it is possible for a rabid anti-Semite burning Israeli flags in pro-Palestinian meetings for a number of years to be on a bima here celebrating Shabbat with you, anybody and everybody can also recover. So we can only react through punitive measures. And thank God, during my anti-Semitic years, there were no cell phones. My anti-Semitism were not immortalized. That I wasn't locked up into my ignorance, my hate, my poisoned intellectual and ethical moral life. Therefore, for those of us who are people of faith and morality, our prayerful response, our lightful response to the darkness, at least for some of us, should also include engagement, grace, educational opportunities, and giving people second, third, and fourth chance. The rise of anti-Semitism and hate is a reflection of a collective failure. If we don't do this in the holistic sense possible, one of the ways in which, also the last issue, beautiful, Holy Quran beautifully says, repel evil, replace evil with what's better. If we are not coming from a place of moral and ethical commitment, we become so anti-evil, we become so anti-whatever is disturbing us, but we would forget what we are for, what we are pro. What are we going to replace that evil that is on the rise? What kind of ethical, moral light that we are producing into this? But one of the most important consequences of not doing this from a place of prayer, from a place of moral commitment and light, is only doing it as a crisis management problem solving. It takes us from the hook, it takes us from the responsibility into the guilt space. One of the greatest consequences of this evil on the rise is showing us that this risen hate and anti-Semitism, there are few people who are guilty for this, but there is a possibility that all of us are responsible. When Dr. King was writing his letter from Birmingham jail, he didn't write to those racists and the haters of his time. He wrote to his community. He wrote to good people and said, you may not be guilty of this problem, again, in the spirit of Abraham Joshua Heschel, but you are responsible with your inaction. As the wise man said once, for evil to flourish, for hate to flourish, all it takes for good people to do nothing. All it takes for good people to not to do anything. So it is an invitation, prayerful invitation to me primarily, but for all of us. Is our inaction, is our slumber, is our lack of moral action, is our lack of responses to what's going on around us, is part of the problem. It is one of the fundamental reasons why this hate and anti-Semitism is on the rise. Let me give you my own example before I throw a stone to anybody and everybody. If that anti-Semitic terrorist from Colleyville, Texas, while he called our Rabbi Angela Buchdahl, he vomited all his anti-Semitism and conspiracy theories. If you are a Muslim and you heard these conspiracy theories in your communities, in your dinner tables, in your Eid celebrations, in your khutbahs, and you did nothing, you are complicit. If you are not surprised of the mainstream of these obsessive conspiracy theories about Jews, Judaism, Zionism, and Israel, and you have not done anything, that means you may not be guilty of this rising anti-Semitism, but you are responsible. In that spirit, sisters and brothers, and of ethics and morality and faith, people may be busy shouting, criticizing, and condemning the darkness. Let's be part of the people who are lighting candle in response. And let's develop that candle together. Inshallah, Bezrat Hashem, Shabbat Shalom again.
And I'd always praise your name. Thank you for listening to this edition of Central Synagogue's podcast. Be sure to subscribe so you're in the loop on future episodes. And please follow us on social media or watch our live stream at centralsynagogue.org, our Facebook page, or on national cable at the Jewish Broadcasting Service. Thanks again for joining us. Eloheinu neshalom, v'hamideinu shomayim.